This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Douglas Impoga in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
the negative perception that has come with sanctions has impacted on foreign direct investment inflows. This in turn negatively affects our economic growth.
Thus, Zimbabwean President Emmerson Mnangagwa on what he says as a result of international sanctions. Also, Botswana's ruling party has extended its rule with a surprisingly easy election victory. The death toll in clashes in Ethiopia has risen to at least 27. And Zimbabwe is holding a national holiday to allow people to protest against international sanctions. We'll have these stories and more, so stay with us. There's a lot more ahead on Africa News Tonight. And our top story this hour, the ruling Botswana Democratic Party has won the Southern African country's hotly contested election, which was held Wednesday. The elections were expected to be close, but the BDP was on course to a resounding victory as results continued to come in on Friday. From Gaborone, Botswana, Mukondisi Dupe has more.
The Botswana Democratic Party shrugged off a spirited challenge from the opposition coalition, the Umbrella for Democratic Change, to keep its 53-year uninterrupted rule intact. On Friday morning, the BDP secured the 29 of the 57 National Assembly seats required to form the next government. Botswana Chief Justice Terence Ranoane declared BDP leader Mokgweetsi Masisi the country's president.
I, Terence T. Ranoane, in my capacity as the Chief Justice of Botswana and the retaining officer for the presidential elections, have the honor to declare to the nation of Botswana and the world at large that Dr. Mokgweetsi Eric Kiabetso Masisi is the elected president of the Republic of Botswana.
Ruling party supporter Cindy Spanda says she's happy with the outcome of the elections after a tough campaign.
I'm very excited with the outcome of the elections. President Masisi is God chosen. He deserves it. He's a man who wants what's best for the people. He's a man who respects human beings. That's what I voted for, and that's what we were given.
Opposition supporters, however, are in a state of despair. 30-year-old Mpho Luweto admits he had been optimistic when he cast his vote, but was shocked with the outcome, particularly after a promising campaign.
I'm actually surprised about the results. I didn't expect this, but I was actually shocked that we didn't manage to get not even a single seat, especially in Gaborone. But I'm actually happy that we managed to win like the constituencies that we have never won before, especially in the north. But this was a strange election.
Some losing opposition candidates, such as Sam Tihwa, who lost to the country's former vice president, Slamba Tsokgwane, say there was intimidation and fraudulent voting in some areas. The much-anticipated polls attracted a large turnout, with some people unable to cast their vote by cut-off time on Wednesday. The BDP raced into an early lead on Thursday after dislodging the opposition from its urban strongholds. In the capital, Gaborone, the opposition failed to win a single seat for the first time since 1984. It made inroads in traditional BDP areas in the central district, although that was not enough to ensure a change of government. Mqondisi Dube for VOA News, Gaborone, Botswana.
Dozens have died in violent protests that occurred on Wednesday and Thursday in Ethiopia in the Oromia, Harar and Deadawa regions. The clashes started because of tensions between federal security forces and a prominent activist and executive director of the Oromia Media Network. Media reports estimate about 27 people have been killed. Today, the government spokesman, Major General Mohamed Tesema, said security forces have deployed to contain unrest in regions where tensions continued. Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed returns today from Russia, where he has been attending the Russia-African summit. While there, he blamed the news media for stirring up ethnic violence. A colleague from the Afan Oromo Service, Mukta Jamel, was attacked by about 20 people in Adama town as he was reporting about people killed during clashes in the region. He has been admitted to a hospital and is receiving treatment. There has been growing calls for Zimbabwe's government for the lifting of the targeted sanctions. Today, the government declared a public holiday and asked citizens to march against the sanctions. Reporter Kuzai Vinavashe has more from Harare.
Slogans, prayers, dancing, and singing to demand the lifting of sanctions on Zimbabwe. Hundreds of Zimbabweans are marching against sanctions. They were supported by similar protests in the Southern African Development Community member states, along with other nations such as Rwanda and Tanzania. Minister of Higher and Tertiary Education, Amon Murwira, told the state broadcaster the government is encouraged by the support.
We are really very humbled by this move by SADC to make sure that the issues of Zimbabwe and the sanctions are highlighted.
The marches ended at the National Sports Stadium, where Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa spoke about what he says are the results of the sanctions.
The manufacturing sector has seen the country losing most of its overseas international market. The negative perception that has come with sanctions has impacted on foreign direct investment inflows. This in turn negatively affects our economic growth.
The United States began imposing sanctions on Zimbabwean officials and companies more than 15 years ago in response to human rights abuses by the government of the late President Robert Mugabe, including the seizure of white-owned land. The U.S. Embassy says sanctions now cover 141 individuals and companies. The European Union says it banned visits by Mugabe's widow, barred European companies from working with Zimbabwe defense industries, and has imposed an arms embargo on Harare. The Zimbabwean government often blames the sanctions for the country's decades of economic hardships. Tafadzwa Ngoni, a web developer, says the targeted sanctions have often affected him.
I'm hoping that the anti-sanctions march at least manages to start a discussion that helps us get to a position where these sanctions are removed. In my field of work as a professional, I have run into quite a bit of prejudice with people saying they won't deal with someone who operates in Zimbabwe.
Ngoni says there hasn't been enough publicity about the true nature of sanctions. So some business owners in Europe or the US think the sanctions apply on every company and individual in Zimbabwe. The US ambassador to Zimbabwe, Brian Nichols, on Thursday said the biggest sanction on Zimbabwe was rampant corruption.
The biggest sanctions on Zimbabwe are the sanctions Zimbabwe puts on itself. $3 billion in unaccounted for spending in command agriculture. Those types of problems, Zanara losing $25 million unaccounted for and all of its executives building luxurious homes, and the list goes on and on.
Zimbabwe's economy suffers from raging inflation and shortages of currency, fuel, and food. The government says the sanctions are responsible for slow growth and discourage foreign investment. Plus, they say sanctions make it hard for Zimbabwe to borrow funds. However, some government critics say failure to repay its debts has blocked Zimbabwe from borrowing. There are opposition figures who blame government mismanagement for the country's economic woes and say that sanctions should remain until human rights are better protected. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashi from Harare.
In Malawi, the police service there is investigating its officers over allegations of sexually harassing female protesters during recent post-election demonstrations in the capital Lilongwe. Rights campaigners say they have evidence of rape, sexual harassment, and torture of women during the riots. Lameka Masina reports from Blantyre.
The riots began when protesters at Nsundwe Trading Center blocked the ruling party supporters from attending a political rally. President Peter Mutharika addressed female protesters, say police humiliated them in front of their children. She says the police beat us up severely, that we are unable to walk. But when we regained strength and walked away, they followed us into our homes, where they tore off our clothes and underwear and started touching everywhere. Women rights group NGO Gender Coordinating Network says in a statement that it has recorded evidence from several victims, including three girls who said police raped them in their homes. On Friday, the women's rights campaigners, including the Women Lawyers Association of Malawi and the Women's Legal Resource Center, held street protests in the capital, Lilongwe, demanding thorough investigations in the matter and the immediate arrest of police officers involved. But police say it's too early to start arresting anyone. James Gadadzera is the spokesperson for the Malawi Police Service.
There is an inquiry taking place to find out if indeed these allegations leveled against the police are true. So when the report says the allegations are true, then it will come up with the suspect. So those suspects will now be investigated.
Gadadzela refused to disclose the progress of the inquiry.
I cannot come out and start giving out bits of how their inquiry is going. We'll wait till they finish the inquiry. They will furnish us with a report. And this report will be for public consumption.
Malawi has been facing a wave of violent protests since President Peter Mutharika secured a second term in May, which opposition leaders are now challenging in court, seeking a nullification of the presidential vote. Commentators doubt the independence of the police inquiry. Political analyst Vincent Kondowe says allowing the police to investigate its own officers is wrong.
A subject which is being suspected of having been involved in certain criminal element cannot investigate himself. Therefore, there could be other state oversight institutions which should be called upon to investigate such allegations. In this instance, we are talking of the Malawi Human Rights Commission and the Office of the Ombudsman.
Police spokesperson Gadadzela sought to allay those fears.
This inquiry team will do its job without bias. If anybody is doubting this, we are saying, why can't they just join the inquiry? Because there is no point standing far and proclaim that the police will not do any good job without coming in and participating.
However, rights campaigners say they will conduct their own investigations should the police inquiry fail to come up with a balanced report. In the meantime, the Association of Women Lawyers in the country has offered a free legal assistance to the victims. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
A high-level delegation from the United Nations and the African Union has wrapped up a visit to Somalia, calling on women to participate in the country's ongoing efforts to restore peace and security. From Nairobi, VOA's Ruben Chama reports.
The visit to the war-torn Horn of African nation focused on women's participation in peace and security. Amina Mohamed, the UN Deputy Secretary General, led the joint mission.
The mission and the UN country team are here to support the journey that Somalia has. It will be a difficult journey, but it will be one that we believe has so much opportunity and hope. We know that the importance of women at the center of things, carrying the burden of what is felt most in the society in the conflict, it is they that will stand strong and be able to lead in the peace, in the reconciliation, in the mediation that is needed.
Speaking in the Somali capital, Mogadishu, the delegation welcomed the increased role of women in the country's security and development efforts and called for further progress. The top UN diplomat said despite the ongoing violence, Somalia had made significant progress on its path to peace and stability.
We listened to the different constituencies to ensure the centrality of women in the rebirthing, in the healing of a nation that has so much opportunity and prosperity ahead of it. We listened in particular to the upcoming elections and the hope that will include women, to see women in leadership. More importantly, the quota, to see women all through from the federal to the states participating in the electoral process.
The country is preparing for federal elections in 2020. The country has endured civil war and attacks by the Al-Shabaab militants for more than two decades. Mohammed was accompanied by representatives from the African Union and other high-ranking UN officials. While in Mogadishu, the high-level delegation also held talks with Prime Minister Hassan Ali Khayre and other officials, as well as with civil society representatives and electoral authorities. Bineta Diop is the African Union Special Envoy on Women, Peace and Security.
This is the third mission that the Deputy Secretary General and myself have undertaken in, I would say, places in solidarity to the women of Africa. Listening to the women that have in our forces that have reduced the threat posed by violent extremism.
Deka Yasin, Somalia's Federal Minister of Women and Human Rights Development, praised the joint mission.
I would like to thank you again for your timely visit to Somalia. Your presence in Mogadishu solidifies the UN and the AU commitment to the betterment of Somalia. The United Nations is a major backer of Somalia, and their collaboration is critical. The UN has stood by the Somali government over the past decades, and we have made remarkable achievements.
The one-day mission to Somalia was part of a six-day tour to countries in the region, including Ethiopia, Sudan, Djibouti, and Eritrea. Ruben Choma, VOA News, Nairobi.
Somalia's historic monuments that were damaged or destroyed during years of civil war have been restored as part of efforts to revive the country's cultural heritage. A ceremony to unveil restored statues was held last week, as Mohamed Sheikh Noor reports from Mogadishu.
Abdul Qadir Hussein Mah has long campaigned for the restoration of Somalia's cultural heritage damaged by decades of civil war and extremism. Mah has been collecting pieces since civil war broke out in 1991, but the independence monuments have been damaged from fighting dating back to the 1980s. Mah is now the chairman of Somali Academy of Science and Artists. He says he has sought the help of anyone who has knowledge of the country's heritage. The long civil war has really destroyed all kinds of cultural heritage, Mah said. The Somali government last week unveiled the restored statues of independence fighters in Mogadishu as part of its plan to revive the country's rich history. Speaking at the launching ceremony, Somali President Mohamed Abdullahi Farmaajo said his government is the first to complete the restoration of the country's historical monuments. He said, "We are delighted to be part of the revival of the country's historic monuments. They are symbolic and have so much meaning for the country." The restored monuments include the Dagahtur Monument, which honors stone-throwing Somalis killed in the struggle for independence against British forces. Among those killed was the father of Somalia's former Prime Minister Mohamed Abdi Yusuf. Paying a short visit to this monument, Yusuf recalled the painful experience of losing his father in the battle and what the monument means to him. He said the monument has so much meaning, not only for me, but also the entire people, because it is the place where the freedom fighters were decimated. Yusuf added that the incident brought about the independence from Britain 10 years later. Mogadishu is a city emerging from the ashes of civil war while living under the constant threat of Al-Shabaab terrorism. But it is also a city honoring those who gave their lives in the name of an independent Somalia. Mohamed Sheikh Noor for VOA News, Mogadishu.
In Kayole, a slum in Kenya's national capital, Nairobi, young boys and girls converge at least twice a week to work on their martial arts skills. Some used to be involved in criminal activities but have found a new pastime, Muay Thai, a combat sport originally from Thailand. It has provided most with a new lease on life and a pathway from crime. Rael Ombor reports.
Kayole Social Hall in Nairobi's Eastland area normally hosts meetings and gatherings of locals, but on weekends, it becomes a training space for dozens of young athletes. Most like Gabriel Aroka are trying to change their lives.
If it wasn't for this sport, I really don't know where I would have been right now. I was probably dead. I was rolling with bad company. For like this sport takes a lot of my time, so I don't get to spend a lot of time with my friends. So for one, my time has been valuable here than outside.
Aroka is talking about Muay Thai, a combat sport originally from Thailand that uses stand-up striking and other clinching techniques to hold the opponent. Many who have taken up the sport were once involved in criminal activities, according to Coach Gilbert Miruka.
They could be now smoking glue, maybe some of them may be doing weeds, some of them may be doing evil things like mugging, there's mugging, snatching, yeah. When you put your clothes on the line, some of them might pick them and go and sell it for the so that they can get money for the stuff.
Miruka has been training Muay Thai fighters for 18 years, and some like Aroka have gone on to win local and international titles. This year, Aroka became the East African champion in the welterweight category under the International Federation of Muay Thai Associations.
I can say that me being an inspiration to another youth, especially here in Kayole, it really means a lot because I believe if I can change, what about the others? And since I have people who follow me around asking me, wanting to know when's the next game, I feel good and I feel honored.
Kayole is considered one of the most dangerous neighborhoods in Nairobi. Unemployment, criminal activity and shootings by police are rampant. Coach Miruka says crime and violence could be reduced if the government helped Muay Thai fighters to travel to Thailand for more training and competition.
What I believe, Muay Thai originated from Thailand, but we Kenyans, we are the best. If you're given the support and every stuff, you can bring more title belts in Nairobi.
In 2016, the International Olympic Committee recognized Muay Thai as a provisional Olympic sport. That means it could be a sport at the 2020 Summer Games in Tokyo. Aroka and other fighters in Kenya are training for that possibility. Rai Lombor for VOA News, Nairobi.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Douglas Simpoga in Washington. For all latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Night. On behalf of our producer, Bill Wakinja, and our engineer, Nick Ivanovich, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in, you will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports, Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.